So, dear friend, Bhagavad Gita that we have been studying over a few years, every Friday, is the science of going beyond this world full of conflicts and suffering, and thus be established in perfect peace and perfect harmony. Sometimes human beings feel that let me become free and perfect without giving up this worldly attachments. But what it really means is that let me be bound and let me be free. Let me have all the conflicts and let me have harmony. So this is not really possible, friends. We have to get over the illusions, and thus when we get over these illusions, this confusing aspect of our life, that who am I, what is this world, what is my connection with the world, what is this body, what changes and what doesn't change, then we come to the deeper level of understanding, and this is what we have been studying throughout in Bhagavad Gita. Bhagavad Gita, like a very kind-hearted mother, wants to give us the best thing. A conscientious mother tries to see that her child gets the best things in the world. And what is the best thing in the world? That is the knowledge. Knowledge by which you become free. And because that is what we really seek. We think many times like this, that yes, I want freedom. And let us imprint it on our heart. I want freedom. And do we really want freedom? Any of you? Nobody wants freedom? What? Yes, say, we want freedom.
Freedom.
Excellent. You know, we want freedom. What, Ritu, you were not saying? You want bondage? Or you want freedom? She says both. I forget that. And that is what we keep on thinking, that I will be free and yet my bondage will not go away. So, that is, friends, not possible. We have to understand this basic truth, that if we want to be free, then we have to get rid of bondage. If we want happiness, and we have to get rid of misery or suffering. If we want a life that is full of peace and harmony, then we have to get rid of all those things which cause the disharmony and conflicts and contradictions in life. And this is what Bhagavad Gita does for us. That, of course, when we are taken away, we are taken away from things which we are attached to, then there is some crying, there is some weeping, and there is some screaming about it. That, oh, my bondage is so nice, I don't want to get rid of it. It is. But the mother, Bhagavad Gita, being a conscientious mother, she doesn't take much notice of this kind of crime and takes away this world. That is what we chant in the beginning of every Bhagavad Gita class. Ambatvam anusandhame Bhagavad Gita bhavadveshini. That is bhavadveshini. That is, it hates this bondage of conflicting existence. It hates this bondage. And so it will take it away from us. And then we will be really established in freedom. And then we will see how kind this mother was. Now, when it is taking away bondage because of our attachment to bondage, although we crave for freedom, there is some attachment to bondage. Oh, how nice my surroundings are, and how nice my parents or my grandparents or my grandchildren are. And do you mean to say that all this is really a play? Is it not all real? Well, friends, in ignorance only it appears to be real. Just as your children, when you are dreaming, you have children. When you wake up, what happens to those children? You don't feel then any attachment for that. You say, oh, it was a dream. It was not real. Sri Ramakrishna used to tell that story, and that a man had his son and was sick. And that night the sickness increased a lot. And the little kid breathed his last in the morning. And the mother was crying and crying. Very natural, you know, that it is the death of a child. One's own offspring is so difficult to withstand. Now, she saw that her husband, the father, was not crying at all, and she said, hey, what is this? You don't feel our only son died, and are you heartless? You don't feel any pain for that? And he said, what happened, you know, yesterday when I fell asleep, I saw that I have become a big king. And I have 7 sons, and I am having a lot of good time with them. But when I woke up, then I saw all those sons are gone. So now I feel a bit confusion, whether should I cry for this one son or should I cry for those 7 sons. That is the problem. It is our entanglements are pretty deep, and so it needs surgical intervention. And surgery means some pain, some anxiety. Many have lot of anxiety for when there is some surgery. Some may just avoid surgery because of the fear that, oh no, no, I don't want. Oh, you will get better. No, I don't want surgery. One lady I know, she was resisting a surgery for a long, long time. The doctor said, well, this is the way you can get better. And whenever I used to meet her, I used to insist based on the experience of others and all that, and my own experience, that well, you have go for surgery, that is the only way. there is no medication for this problem of yours. And this surgery is simple. And don't worry, you will get well soon. And she was not listening at all. Then one day, she was in terrible pain. And then I scolded her left and right. And then she went for the surgery. Now after 2 years, now she is so happy and says, "Wow, Swami, thank you. But for you, I wouldn't have gone for surgery." The idea is, you know, that initially one does feel that if I realize the truth, what will happen to this world? Well, what happens to it anyway? Think about it. What happens to it? Howsoever attached you may be to the things around, my children, my parents, my community, what happens to it? It is taken away anyway from you. Your crying, wailing doesn't stop it. What happens when it is taken away from you by force? Then you don't get liberated. But when you discriminate and become detached and give up, then it is a different thing. Then you get liberated, you get the freedom. So therefore, a wise person sees this, that why should I try to cling to those things which are anyway going to be taken from me. So giving them up, I do not lose anything anyway. I told you many times that story of a friend. Two friends were going and then one friend said, "Well, I want to buy something on the way and we are going together. I don't have $1,000 with me right now. Will you lend me? You have. So you lend me, after we reach home I will pay back to you. Just I want to buy something." And the friend knew him, so okay, it doesn't matter, take this $1,000. So they continued walking, and then suddenly from nowhere a robber came there with gun in hand. "Hey, take out whatever you have." Now the one who had borrowed $1,000, he took it out and gave back to friend. "Hey, look, I am giving it back to you." Because anyway it was going to be taken away. So why pay twice? Why pay twice? It is, I am not saying that in this context the moral of the story is that what is that you are not being told to renounce something that is going to stay with you. What you have to give up is anyway all that which is going to be taken away, and you are not going to have it with you for long. And even when we have it, it is suffering, it is pain. We get used to that pain and start calling it, "Oh, how nice it is," because of attachments. So now we see in this 13th chapter, Lord Krishna is telling that we have to see that this is told in brief. He says, 18th verse, "Iti kshetram tatha jnanam jneyam choktam samasatah madbhaktah etad vijnaya madbhavayopapadyate." Thus, the kshetra, the knowledge and the knowable have been stated in brief. Knowing this, my devotee becomes fit to attain my being. So knowing that what is the goal of life, that is jnayam. Here, what is meant by jnayam, that is knowable. What we should try to know as the Mandukya Upanishad says, Sa Atma Sa Vijneyaha, the self that is to be realized. That is the only thing worthwhile in life. We may try to learn and know many other things. They have their limited utilities. But the real knowledge that is going to fulfill our life is the knowledge of the self. So therefore, it is the really knowable thing, jnayam. And what connects you to it, that is real knowledge. And that has been told, the cultivation of all the virtues, and which will enable us to get there, to get to that knowledge that has been explained. And the other things, the changing aspect in the life. Well, they come and they go. Don't worry too much about it. Deal with them as well as you can, but never get entangled in them. And never think that that is you. Sri Ramakrishna, in very simple words, used to therefore say that what is ignorance? I and mine is ignorance. Lord, thou alone, thou and thine, that is knowledge. So the next line therefore says, Madhbhaktaha. The way to do it is through this practice of connecting to that which is real, that is God. Let our feelings, our emotions, instead of wasting them on the worldly connections, let them be all directed towards God. When that is done, then Madhbhaktaha, you become devotee, you become the God's servant, you become connected with God. When one gets connected to God, then you get to God, you realize the truth. So this is the process. Now, in the coming verses, it is shown how this conglomeration, this compound of body and soul works. It is an interesting thing. We get many doubts when we hear that all is divine, you are not the body, you are not the mind, and so forth. One doubt comes to the minds of everyone. Except those who are completely detached, everybody will have this doubt, and that is why Lord is dealing with it. The truth is really clear, but our attachments to the world raises lot of doubts, and very often raised doubt is this. Then how this connection between the body and soul works? I know this is I, and this is not I, this is not I, this is not I, this is I. And then I work accordingly, I do things accordingly. If I eat, I know that I will feel satisfaction, I will feel that my stomach is full. If somebody else eats, if Joan eats, not that she eats, but she eats almost nothing, but if she eats, then I won't feel that, oh, okay, my stomach is full. We do work as individual and get the benefit of this, that if I do good deeds, I expect good results from it and I get them. And if I do bad things and against my conscience, then I get the bad results of that, and I know why did I get it. It is therefore, what is this connection this body is certainly has, it has an actual connection with me. It is not that I am not the body, but how then are they connected? It is how these eyes I use, I see through these eyes. I cannot see through the eyes of Krishna. I cannot see through the eyes of somebody else. It is so difficult, you know. Therefore, we stick to our positions. Because we see through only one set of eyes. And so, we think that that is real. Somebody's eyes might be seeing something different. But then, since they are not my eyes, I don't identify with that. That person, whatever that person sees is not real. What I see is real. So, my organs, my body, somehow it has a real tangible connection with me. Otherwise, how can I use it? I cannot use somebody's hands, somebody's legs. I can't imagine, you know, that if I have to say, walk to say India Point, then I will not be able to say, come on Dan, yes, I am walking by your legs. It is not possible. I won't get the feeling that I had a nice walk. It is. So there is some connection with the body. And so you are saying that you are not the body seems to be, although the logic that you give that I unchanging and body changing sounds to reason. I don't deny that, that it is certainly, it makes sense, no doubt. But then how do you explain this? That this body and I, they go together, is it not? See, I develop so many habits, then my DNA, that is the body, that is kind of unchanging. So am I not that? I have my appearance, I have then the genetically transmitted qualities and all that from my parents. Look, I and my twin look so alike. It is, how does it happen if the body is all unreal and I have no connection with it? So there is some connection. You may not be able to tell it, but there should be something. So now, that interesting, very interesting topic really begins here. That what is this body? How does I get connected with it? Well, it is told here that it is not that at a particular point this connection got established. Don't think that when it came to be established, both are eternal. Eternal means that it is always there, always, because it is beyond time. Time, friends, is a product of this connection between body and the consciousness, connection between matter and the self, and gives a peculiar sense of time. Beyond that, the time has no existence at all. And therefore, when I did this connection between body and soul, when did it take place? How many years ago? And why did it happen? All these questions really have no meaning. Because that didn't happen in time. Time rather is a product of that. It is not the cause of it. It didn't happen in time. It didn't happen because of time. It gave rise to time. And so when we ask this question about when, how, why this soul and body came to be connected, it is not possible to answer, because there is no time there. This understanding must become clear, friends. We, even many scholarly people, I found this very intriguing, like even Kant could not come to this idea that time is a relative something. He took time to be absolute. And thus we find there is lot of confusion that creeps in as the discussions go on there. It is so intuitively clear to us that time is just an absolute. Therefore, as the popular saying goes, that time and tide wait for none. Well, in a relative framework, that is all right. But let us not fall into this trap that time has an existence of itself apart from the perceiver. It took the genius of Einstein to bring this to the fore. These days we are in the early morning, we are reading Swami Vivekananda's great treatise, Jnana Yoga. And in that, this point is made very clear. At many places, especially the reading that we had yesterday, that was about the real nature of man, and we see there this idea that it is the time is a relative something, and there is no time that is before us, and you get the time. It is asking this question, you know, just to give an analogy, don't stretch it too far. Analogy is to just make us understand things. So the analogy, suppose you are seeing a snake where there is rope. Now if you ask the question, at what age of that snake its tail became so long? Now there is basically no snake, so there is no tail. And at what time it grew so long, there is no answer to that. How can you answer? How many teeth that snake has? Or whether the snake has is poisonous or not poisonous? Those questions really do not have an answer. It is not because we do not know, but because there is these questions make no sense. There is no snake, and so how can you really answer how many teeth that snake has, and whether the snake is poisonous or not, or how long is the tail of that snake, when it was short and when it became long? No answer to it. Only answer would be, go closer. Go closer, see for yourself. And then when the truth dawns, it is rope, then what happens? Do those questions get answered? That, well, in a way they get answered, that, oh, what a fool I was. So similarly, the answer that we will get about that how, at what time this ignorance start? At what time did this ignorance start? This question is meaningless. There is time is a product of that ignorance. So when ignorance starts, there you already assume that the time is absolute, and ignorance starts in time. That is not the case, friends. And let us be clear about it. We have to pay attention, you know, to these discussions. These are intellectually a bit difficult to grasp, and not because they are difficult as such, but because of our assumptions. We take for granted that the time is absolute, real, everything happens in time, and so my ignorance also must have started in time, and thus the confusion gets compounded. It is therefore it is said, no, that this prakritim purusham chaiva vidhi anadi ubhavapi vikaranascha gunascheiva vidhi prakritam bhavan. No, both prakriti and purusha to be beginningless. That this prakriti here is all that is changing, all the matter that is prakriti. And purusha is the one who becomes conscious of it, the one who knows it. The knower is the purusha. Here the word purusha should not be understood as a popular meaning is purusha is man, male, and stri is female in Sanskrit, but not in this context. Here the word purusha means purishayanat, means the one who dwells in this town called the body. We dwell in the body. So the body is kind of a town in which we have our home. So Puri is means in Sanskrit the town. And so the one who dwells in the Puri, this town of this body, is called Purusha. So this both, he says, are together. Both exist for eternally. There is no way you can tell at what time did it come up. Now let us see how to distinguish them. Vikaranascha gunascheiva, that the evolutes of the and the gunas as born of prakriti. Whatever you see coming up, whatever is you see as a product, whatever, including your thoughts, feelings, the external objects, whatever is coming up, whatever has a birth, whatever grows, whatever gets destroyed, whatever changes, all that is called vikara. And guna means the differentiation. One important aspect of this creation is that no two things are alike exactly. No two things can be completely alike. There is some similarity in things, but even two atoms will be different. Two electrons also will have difference. It is not exactly same. Their being two means there is some difference in them. That is why they are two. It is everything in this world, therefore, is distinct from something, every other thing. And no two things are exactly alike. So, this differentiation, what causes this differentiation? Prakriti. And whenever you see this distinctions, and distinction is not a theory, friends, it is a matter of our experience. We see this distinction, we experience this distinction, I and the world. And in the world, A, B, C, D, so many different things. Then not they are only different, we make grades in them. what is higher, what is lower, what is better, what is worse, and so forth. It is a very natural tendency. Yesterday we had a discussion on at Providence College about the bringing the harmony of the religions, and when somebody not belonging to your tradition approaches you, then how you break the stereotypes. So stereotypes, that yes, this is good, this is nice, and this is not nice, this is not good, and we make stereotypes. We attach a value to everything in terms of, say, beauty. This is more beautiful, that is not beautiful. And this is more beneficial, that is not beneficial. And this I like, this I don't like. All these gradations, all these associating everything with value in different terms, all that happens in Prakriti. It goes on. In Prakriti all this keeps on happening all the time. This is the characteristic of Prakriti. Why it is being told here with this, Prakriti Sambhavan, that they are products of what you see change. You are not involved in it. You do not do it at all. It is Prakriti which may have all these modifications. Now what happens to Purusha? Next verse tells this after and telling something more about Prakriti. How the division then, what is the role of Purusha? If Prakriti alone changes, if Prakriti alone does everything, what does this Purusha, this fellow do? Has no role? Nothing? Well, no and yes. It has no role. But everything happens for Purusha. Everything happens with the presence of Purusha. The conscious being kind of presides over everything without doing anything. All that is done is by Prakriti, and the soul just presides over it and gets all the benefits. All the results come to good as well as bad. The enjoyer or the sufferer of that is Purusha. Prakriti does not suffer nor does it enjoy. The matter does not suffer. Matter does not enjoy. Who enjoys? Well, that is Purusha. It is the matter being inert, it doesn't get any benefit. That word doesn't become applicable to it. It is I who get the benefit. So, karya karana kartritve hetu prakriti ichyate purusha sukha dukkhanam bhokritve hetu ichyate. With respect to the production of the effect, the body, and the causes, the senses, Prakriti is said to be the cause, while with respect to the experience of happiness and misery, the Purusha is said to be the cause. So this is the two combined are like that. You eat something, now something that you like, you eat. Now what has happened, all that action is changes in Prakriti. That some matter was there, it came to this matter, and all that. So, the changes took place only in matter. Some matter was in this space, it got into this space. Now, If something that I ate, I liked, then who gets the happiness of it? And that food doesn't get the happiness of it. The matter doesn't get the happiness of it. The soul gets the pleasure. And if I didn't like it, it was too bitter and I couldn't even, you know, say no. And sometimes it happens, you know, that you are because of the social conditions, you are offered something, and then even if you don't like, you eat it. So you suffer. Who suffers for that again? And there was in a feast, arranged in the honor of a son-in-law who had come to the the in-law family, and son-in-law is considered in India as a very respectable person, should be given highest treatment. So he, many food items were prepared for that, and some greens were also one of the food items. And they didn't know that the son-in-law, this man, doesn't like these greens. So that greens were served in the plate. The son-in-law thought, now if I keep on seeing these greens, I will not be able to relish any other food. So he decided that, well, let me first eat that green, so that the next, now I will be able to enjoy the other items there. Other delicacies can be well enjoyed. So he first put it in the mouth. And those in-laws, the ladies there, they thought, oh, he specially likes this. So they brought more of it. And then he had, you know, if that is in front, he cannot really enjoy any food. So every time he used to eat it, and they thought, oh, he's liking it, he really craves for it. So they again and again, right? And you can imagine the suffering of this fellow. So in the conversation, somebody there asked him that, hey, how many siblings are you? Now this suffering fellow said, if I could get out of this green, then we are five, otherwise only four. So it's like that now you are eating it, what is happening? Again the same thing, that some matter outside is getting inside here. From just like in a grocery store, you pick something big, bring to the cash counter and then put in your bag. So that it is those things kept out there, you have put in this bag called stomach. It is a bag after all. It is a skin bag. So it has a processor, food processor also connected with it, that's all. So it is food processor, garbage disposal and all that are connected there. So you put it in that bag. That is what has happened. Nothing more than that. But then who got the joy or who got the suffering of it? That is the purusha. That is the... So, sukha dukkhanam bhoktritve hetu ruchyate. Kartritve hetu prakriti means who does it? Kartritva means doing. Who does it? Prakriti does it. Purusha doesn't do anything. Lazy number one. That doesn't move at all. It is just remains as it is. No movement in Purusha. I heard a nice joke that who is the laziest person? So a man was told that, well, you know, this person who is doing nothing, just sitting at a place, he is the laziest person. Another said, no, you see that person on the top of the tree, that is the laziest. Sir, how can he be laziest? He at least took the trouble of climbing the tree. But then the man said, no, no, not that. The tree grew under him. So, it doesn't do anything. The tree grew under him and he didn't move. So the Purusha is lazy of that type. Absolutely does not do anything. And yet, and the suffering or enjoyment all comes to this Purusha. Nothing goes to Prakriti. That is how this division is, the matter and the consciousness, when it is tied together. When did it get tied? Don't ask. But as the tied thing, as a compound of matter and consciousness, it is a guardian knot that you cannot open it. It is called in Sanskrit Chit Jada Granthi, that it is, Granthi means knot, tied so intricately that you cannot really see which thread where, you cannot really open it. It is therefore like Alexander, you have to cut that guardian knot, this knot of consciousness and matter, no possibility of resolving it. Why? You know that anything that you call matter has consciousness in it. You always see only a compound. You experience only a compound, not anything pure. It is. So when you are say, this is matter, well, you are experiencing consciousness inside it. When you say that it is consciousness, well, you have to show it in some matter. It is like that. It is tied intricately. Marathi saint poet Jnaneshwar, he therefore has given an analogy. There is the black, these lentils, black lentils, when they are split. So one side is black, the other side, inner side is white. The outer side is black, inner side is white. So if you are told now, hey, from these, take out the black on this side and white on this side. How are you going to do it? Every grain there is not that it is black and that other thing is white. Every single grain is black and white. It is on one side white, on another side black. So how are you going to choose from that? It is not possible. Similarly, when it comes to let me separate, let me just untie this knot, keep on trying, you will not be able to, because it is so intricate. Whatever you call matter, it is the very seeing of that matter is because it involves consciousness. And hey, this is consciousness, very saying this, limiting it, you have matter associated with it, and therefore it is so intricate, you cannot separate it. You can try to just see the different functions of them. Actually, untying them is not possible. So, therefore, Lord is trying to give us an understanding of it is what is what. If you are told, if you are seeing, for example, looking at like ocean having waves. Now, separate, this is ocean and this is waves. Can you do it? You cannot. It is, you see that. But every wave has ocean in it. And whenever you are seeing ocean, you are pointing to some wave or the other there. So, it is therefore inseparable together. It is inseparably conjoined, tied together. It is in Tantra this phenomena gets called Shiva and Shakti bound together. The Shiva and the Parvati or Shakti, which you cannot really tell. They are so intricately bound and tied together. Therefore, you have many temples where you have the image of both together put there. The one image, very beautiful symbology in it, that one image, half side is Shiva, half side is the goddess Parvati, to show that it is all together. In Hindu marriages, to give the couple this idea, at least some reflection of that idea, it is therefore told that it is the two are joined together. One spouse is called as the half body of the other spouse. So it is to give this understanding. The idea is to implant this understanding there, that when we see this world, everything is filled with consciousness, and everything is a thing, that is matter. So, we have this irresolvable confusion. Again, there is further, this is told that why should then we be so particular in resolving this conflict properly? Why should I pay attention to it? It is again a very deep subject. I will just read this verse. We will discuss it by the grace of God next Friday. Purushah prakriti sohi bhunte prakriti jan gunan karanam guna sambhutya tajasajyavani janmasu. For the Purusha residing in prakriti experiences the gunas born of prakriti. The cause of its birth from good and evil sources is its attachment to gunas. So, this is the cause of our suffering, and being forced to be born again and again in various different bodies. And that doesn't depend on what kind of body I will like. So many things play a role in it. So we get bound in so many different bodies. It is somehow once two friends, they decided that somehow we will get a communication link. So we will be able to know when what happens, how the heaven looks like. The other person can then get the knowledge of how the heaven looks like. Instead of imagining, it is good, you know, to have somebody who experiences that. So, this one of them died, and the other person had that device, kind of cell phone that works in the other world also. So, he called him. Hey, how are you? Fine. How is this heaven? What heaven? Heaven? It is all green around. Green heaven. Heaven is green.
Oh, what? It is, I am a cow in Montana.
So, it is the fellow was a cow in Montana. So, all green, because the heavens was green. So, we can get born in many different ways and forced to. There is no right choice there. So, this is a very interesting topic, friends, but we will have to wait for that. Our Anup had a question. I told him, please wait, let me finish.
No, it was not a question. When you were talking about time, and that kind of reminded me of a dialogue in a movie, old Hollywood movie, 1935 or 36, where this character says, talks about time, and he says time is something that's manufactured by the Swiss. The French hold it, the Italians squander it, Americans say time is money, and Hindus say it doesn't exist.
That's good. That's very good. Any other question?
The whole expression has been given as from two distinct entities, although they are each the Prabhu. And yeah. You cannot differentiate them. So why call them two?
You can differentiate them in your awareness. Means you become aware as two, but still you cannot draw a separating line. That is the problem there. That it is like I and the world. We are aware of that separateness, but we cannot draw a definite line. So that is about everything, that how much consciousness is there and how much matter is there, which part is matter and which part is consciousness, that can never be demarcated, because everything that is you think as matter is consciousness also. And everything that you show as this is consciousness, that showing as this itself puts a material boundary around it. So therefore, it is in ignorance, it is always together. In knowledge, it disappears, this problem disappears. The jnanam brahma, everything is consciousness alone. Consciousness alone is real. There is nothing like matter there. We therefore sing here in Sri Ram Krishna's Arati that we sing here every day. That word comes, Chid Ghanakaya. That means the body is not like that a body. It is consciousness congealed for Sri Ram Krishna. Sri Ram Krishna used to see everything as consciousness congealed, like seeing the ocean, having all these waves. The ocean is in every wave. That conflict is not for a person of knowledge. In ignorance, there is no resolution of this conflict. That is why it is ignorance. In knowledge, there is no problem, there is no need to solve it, because the problem disappears. The problem doesn't mean anything in knowledge. It is only in ignorance that problem is, and there is no solution for it in ignorance.
So then when there is that awareness, instead of enjoyer, then it becomes a witness.
Now please repeat.
When there is awareness and, you know, that separation, you said it all becomes consciousness, instead of the Purusha being enjoyer, it becomes a witness.
That is true. At the time of, because of the poverty of language, it is one has to use these words, but as the knowledge dawns, then this problem doesn't remain there. Who is the enjoyer? The separation goes away.
So therefore, there the problem is not there. Otherwise, keep on finding where they. One analogy that is given here is how we cannot find the consciousness and matter and cannot separate them. As one sees, for example, the reflection of sun in a bucket of water. Now you see the sun there, and if you try to take it out, hey, here is the sun, let me show it to you. Now what do you touch? It is only the water that gets touched. Is the sun there or not there? In a way, is there, is not there. And when is this riddle solved or resolved? When you look up. Then the meaning gets understood. So it is, looking up means getting disentangled from this. If we don't get disentangled, then we keep on again and again making this frustrating effort of trying to take out that shiny, beautiful sun from the bucket of water. Oh, let me go deep. Let me throw the water, then it will be on the bottom, I will find it. Water goes, the sun also goes. So again, you have the riddle or there fresh. So the only way you know and when you resolve the riddle, look up and you see the truth, the sun. Then you know where the sun is. It is not here. It is not here, although it appears to be here. I am here in the body. Try as much as you can. All matter only. Okay.
On the question of when did it begin, the purush comes into the matter at the time of birth on an individual level?
No. A birth happens because of that. At the time of birth, it doesn't come. No. It is the Purusha is already there. It manufactures the different types of the matter changes, that's all. And matter means change. So it doesn't come at the time of birth. No. It is there before birth, even that without this body also, therefore it is.
But it's congealed at the time of birth.
No, not at all. Not at all. It is not so. It is just as to what extent it gets congealed at the time of birth is like you put the jacket.
Yeah.
So this jacket clad Anup, that is the congealment, that's all. So this particular body clad soul. But that is not just as you are putting jackets is not your birth. You are existed before jacket, and you, for you the jacket is. So therefore this body is at the time of birth nothing special really happened except a particular coat was given or chosen actually. It is like in shop, you choose what you like. The shopkeeper only gives. So similarly, parents only give. The soul chooses really. What kind? Chooses means again it depends on many things. Likes, dislikes and the purchasing power. So that's a different subject, you know. So, but that is how it is. Not that at the birth time of birth it happens. No, the psychologist and all they won't understand this. It is, but therefore they have a problem. We were having a discussion in a group, and then one psychologist was there to get, it happened in Brown University. Very nice lady, and was telling about the diversity, how deep it is, how deep it goes, and how the stereotypes are, you know, stuck in our brain and so forth. And then in the questions, I was trying to avoid that reference to, you know, before birth and all that. But it came anyway. And she said, well, it is, I agreed with you, but I can't talk about it. It is, that is it, you know, that we are so stuck to what is observed by these eyes, and that is why we think that the birth is the beginning. Birth is the beginning of a particular section of this movie, that's all. That's about it. Yes, Charles, you have a question?
You've got that gradation you're caused by the world. Now, in the beginning of the Bhagavad Gita, I believe it says to look upon all equally. But then Thakur says some have more manifestations of God than others. So how do you reconcile those two?
Well, in Bhagavad Gita also that part is there. It is anyway when you are seeing the distinctions. If you are not seeing the distinctions, then this doesn't become applicable at all. Now when we are seeing the distinctions, now automatically there is the gradation. You don't make the gradation. Even if you decide not to make, you will assign a value to it. So now therefore, you see what is beneficial for you. And for deciding what is truly beneficial, now assign, instead of assigning the value that this person will be beneficial to me to get more money, this particular person will be beneficial to me to get more sense enjoyment, you now think in the different terms. This person, my connection with this person will be beneficial for me to become spiritually illumined. So that becomes then a better way of classification. Instead of classification based on material wealth, you now shift that classification to spiritual wealth, so that you will go beyond all classifications. So let us conclude with the closing prayer. Gita Srimita Kartavya Kimanyan Shastravishvari Yaswayam Padmanabhasya Murapadmaviniṣṭa Eram Shastram Devaki Putraitam Deko Devo Devaki Putraiva Deko Mantra Prashnamaniyane Karma Vekam Tasya Devasya Seva Thank you.